here's the point I want to make. Here's the point that's so, I think, so indispensable is that, like, when Paul Ryan or one of these trickle-down clowns says, when wages go up, employment goes down, that sounds like a description of reality. That sounds like legit economics. It is not. It is an intimidation tactic masquerading as an economic theory. It is a way for powerful people to bully people without power. It's the oldest trick in the businessman's job suppression handbook. You ask for a raise, I threaten to fire you. And people right. have to begin to hear this for what it is. It is not a description of reality. It is them saying, in other words, we matter, you don't.
That's Nick Hanauer appearing on The Bill Maher Show a number of months back. Nick Hanauer is a millionaire, if not a billionaire. And he runs a group, you can find him on Facebook, they're called Patriotic Millionaires. I pick on millionaires and billionaires a lot on this show. Because what I've learned about greed, and not everybody who's rich is greedy, but quite a few of them are. What I've learned about greed is that when it comes to enough is never, ever enough. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous, but there are a group of millionaires and billionaires that in the pursuit of trying to get themselves more money are doing whatever they have to do in order to get it. And that includes buying, or you could say they've already bought, the United States government. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. Yeah, I wasn't here last week, and I apologize about that. I keep a hell of a schedule, and I think you know that. But yeah, I'm back this week, and I'm glad that you are here with me. So Nick Hanauer runs this group, Patriotic Millionaires, and his idea is simply this. You are a millionaire, or you are a billionaire. You have been blessed by the United States of America. The United States of America has clearly been good to you. What you need to do is pay your fair share of taxes. Yeah, your fair share of taxes is likely going to go into a social program. It's likely going to pay so that somebody who doesn't have the necessary means can have a place to live, can have food to eat, can go to school, can have clothes on their back. Yeah, it's going to pay for... But look, you've done so well. What's the effing problem? But Nick belongs to a very small group. Because when you think about other people, say the Koch brothers or the like, they are looking for ways to get more and more money. It is my personal belief that nobody, and I mean nobody, nobody in the United States of America should have in their account or in their pocket, however you want to describe it, should not have more than $1 billion. Now there are... If you talk to a lot of other folks, their numbers may be different. 100 million, 200 million, 500 million, fine. The Kochs are collectively worth $40 billion, if I'm not mistaken. And I think Bill Gates is worth like $56 billion, and Carlos Slim is worth like $80 billion. But Carlos doesn't live in the United States, so obviously he wouldn't be subject to that necessarily. But Carlos does do a lot of business in the United States. So in my world, Carlos, not living in America, would not be able to lobby our government. But my world is clearly a fantasy world. But I'll tell you this, we are not better off because there are some people that have so much money that it's ridiculous. I think I heard someone called up a radio show earlier this week I was listening to, and they mentioned that they were in finance class. And they were talking about how much $1 billion is. And the teacher said, you know, $1 billion. He said, if you had $1 billion and you spent $1,000 a day, in order for you to spend that entire billion, spending $1,000 a day, in order for you to spend that entire $1 billion, you would have to go, here's how many days you would need at $1,000 a day. You'd have to go all the way back to the birth of Christ in order to spend that $1,000 a day. Now, I don't spend that or anywhere near that. A couple grand a month, mortgage, food, things of that nature. But even if I did, I still wouldn't come near $1 billion. Just think about how much money this is. It's $1,000 million. I'm sure by now everybody has heard about what happened on the United Airlines flight. How the hell can you get away from it? It's been the topic of discussion on television and radio and print. The dude that was dragged off the plane, the doctor dragged off the plane, right? And I haven't watched the video. I can't watch those kinds of, I just don't, human suffering, real human suffering. I've made it pretty clear on this show that I don't enjoy it to any degree. I just don't. So I've heard some of the audio. I didn't want to, but I heard some of the audio of the guy screaming. And then I saw some of the pictures where he got bloodied. And by the way, I tried to see none of it. And it's not because I didn't want to know that this thing happened, because I know it happened. I heard about it. Human suffering, it just gets to me. So how the police dragged him off the plane is a whole different thing. But I don't want to talk about that part of it specifically. You know about that part of it. What I do want to talk about is United's response. And United is an American company, and they are in the business of making money. That's it. That's the only thing in their charter. Just like any other corporate charter, that's the only thing in their charter, is to make as much money as possible. So what they say to their employees is, you guys did a bang-up job. Absolutely fantastic. Kudos to you. 3 cheers for our employees. Rah, rah, rah. And then to the media, they say, well, this guy was being belligerent. And they've got these two responses that seem to go together. But then, what are you guys doing? And then, of course, what we found out is that that didn't really happen. So at this very point, as I'm on this microphone right now, their stock is taking a massive hit. But that's not initially what happened. And here is the unreported story. The airlines, it's a notoriously tough business, right? Since the inception of airlines, we've had a number of them go out of business. Okay, and there are tons of costs associated. Employees, fuel, you got to deal with the fluctuating prices of fuel. Over the last number of years, we've seen them make that money up by charging people for their bags. And according to the Financial Times, almost every major U.S. carrier has declared bankruptcy at least once in the last 15 years. Some of them have declared it more than once. When somebody like United is in business, you would think that we, the customers, the people that they sell the product to, that they would have to answer to us, or that it's a good idea if they answer to us. But they don't answer to us. They answer to their shareholders. And what initially happened with their stock is it started going up. Now, we'll get into what happened with Raytheon in a little bit. But this is disaster capitalism, or what I like to refer to as casual brutality. And that's what I want to cover in today's show, casual brutality, because we seem to have a fair amount of it in our country. And it's not so much that it's uniquely American. I mean, there are any number of brutal countries that are awful to their people around the world, but we do it in a way where we try to convince people that this is just the way it is, this is what's good for you, and we engage in this casual brutality with a smile on our face most of the time. According to the Financial Times, traders responded to the brutality and miserliness of United by bidding up United's share price against the broader market index, and especially against direct competitor Delta Airlines. Pundits might think that the episode was a public relations disaster. And obviously, the cruelty towards this passenger was unconscionable. But for investors, they were impressed by the sadistic commitment to cost control. Quote, unquote, the sadistic commitment to cost control. Because if they can control costs, find a way to make more money, even if they're willing to beat the piss out of somebody to get that money, to save that money, well, that's good news for the investors. So that's the microcosm on this story, right? Let's talk about the macrocosm.
What Donald Trump is proposing is nothing more than a huge tax giveaway for the rich. Rather than taxing the wealthy and then using the money to fix our dangerously outdated roads, bridges, airports, water systems, Trump wants to give rich developers and Wall Street investors tax credits to encourage them to do it.
When President Dum Dum was running for president, what he said, well, all right, I'll be fair, I'll be nice. When Trump was running for president, what he said is he wants to build massive infrastructure, huge infrastructure, so much new infrastructure, you're so much money, you're going to sick of winning. But how's he going to do that? Now, our country is clearly need of infrastructure. Roads, bridges, they're crumbling. Sometimes they're crumbling when they're full of people. A good number of the bridges in this country, I think roughly half of them, get a D rating on structure from engineers. A D rating. That's insane. Right? You think about how much money America has. Richest country in the world. That's what we always hear, right? But our infrastructure, it's truly suffering. So what is his plan once he becomes president? He's got a tax cut plan. What's he want to do? He wants to just give tax cuts. Billions and billions of dollars in tax cuts. Because according to Reaganomics, and if you look at the Laffer curve, and if you look at the Chicago Boys School of Economics, if you believe in this fantasy idea of libertarian economics, and by the way, if you're a libertarian economist, you can drop the word economist from your title. Because you're not an economist. You're a child. And you're a child who believes in magic. Libertarian economics have never, ever worked out anywhere, ever. Neoliberalism, that's the same thing. Neoliberalism, libertarian economics, they're the same. They're effectively, essentially the same thing. And if you believe in those that have never, ever worked out anywhere, you're a child. You believe in magic. Perhaps you should be running for the end of a rainbow at the end of a rainstorm because you believe that there's going to actually be a pot of gold there. Let me explain. So Trump finds a way to give nothing but massive tax breaks to all of his rich friends. And he says, that's how we're going to pay for infrastructure because the belief is cut the taxes and they will use the money to better America because everybody is a patriot. Let's explore that. So Trump right now is using his presidency in every single way possible. I see the emails all the time from his campaign. It doesn't matter what it is. When he sent 59 Tomahawk missiles into Syria last week, he immediately sent out an email to his supporters saying, if you support the fact that I just lobbed 59 missiles at Syria, how about you send some money to my campaign? And it's every single day. Hey, did you hear what I said in the news today? You should send me some money. And it's not just that. He's going to Mar-a-Lago every weekend, which is something that he owns. During the campaign itself, he would regularly spend money, the money that was given to his campaign by donors. He would spend it only on Trump stuff, Trump products. He would rent Trump hotels. It was this whole circular thing so that the money all went back to him. Now, during a campaign, doing that is one thing. Doing that as president, well, this is why we like our presidents to release their tax returns. This is why we want our presidents to divest from their business interests. Okay, dig this. It's a fairly famous story. So Jimmy Carter, who was president from 76 to 80, Jimmy Carter, or 77 to 81, you know what I mean, end of the 70s, right? Reagan was president from 81 to 89. Okay, so there we go, I got it. So Jimmy Carter owned a peanut farm when he became president, a peanut farm, you know, peanuts, the little, where peanut butter comes from. Okay, and he owns this peanut farm, and then he becomes president. And the Republicans start wetting their pants. They say, no way, Mr. President. You can't own a peanut farm and be president. It's just you can't do it because somebody could buy peanuts and that would be giving money directly to the president. And we can't have that. And they weren't taking it. God dang it, the peanut farm. No freaking way, Jimmy Carter. And so he says, well, guys, It says it's a freaking peanut farm. I divest whatever it takes. Nope, not enough. And they launched tons of investigations against him. And then finally he got rid of the freaking peanut farm. Fine, God. I got rid of the peanut farm. I don't have a peanut farm anymore. All right, can you guys get off of it now? They lost their minds over a peanut farm. And there's not a lot of third world dictators that are going to approach a democratic president and say, give me 15 million pounds of peanuts and here is some money. That's not a great way. But if you are, say, the head of Dubai or the head of Saudi Arabia or the head of, oh, I don't know, Zimbabwe, or I mean, just picking countries, and you decide that you want to kick down some money to the president. And so you decide to go and stay at a Trump hotel. And let's say the ballroom of that hotel, right? If you want to rent out the entire ballroom, let's say it costs $100,000 a night, right? You can just rent out the ballroom and not even use it. Just as a way for you to kick down money to the president. Now, you didn't actually hand it to him. You handed it to one of the businesses that he refused to divest from. And all of a sudden, this is A-OK. Now the Republicans are cool with this. That's no problem. He's got no conflict of interest. Even my own representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, even she voted against seeing Trump's tax returns. And why? And she's not calling for him to divest either. Because it's cool. It's cool when a Republican does it. It's just not cool when a Democrat does it. And he still owns all of his businesses. He has not divested from them. And he's finding all kinds of ways as president to make money. So President Trump is making massive cuts to a lot of programs that regular people like you and I like. One of those is the Department of the Interior. Another is the Park Service. So this from Yahoo, Trump donates 3 months' salary to Interior Department, offsetting 0.005% of the proposed budget cut. Trump said, when I become president, I refuse to take a salary, right? Conservatives used to complain all the time, I can't believe we have to pay Obama's salary. What the president makes really isn't that much when you compare it to some of the other salaries, CEOs, for instance, here in America. It's really not that much. Trump says, I'm here for the good of the country and I'm not here to take money from the people. It's a lie, clearly, because he's found all sorts of other ways to make money as president, make money off of being president. And so for him to give this money to the Interior Department or to give money to the Park Service, right? Quoting here, Press Secretary Sean Spicer said that Trump would be donating $78,333 to the National Park Service, an agency of the Department of the Interior. Trump had said during his campaign that he would donate his presidential salary to charity, saying that this is no big deal for me. Right, that's what he said on the trail in 2015. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke was on hand to accept the check, stating that the money would go to infrastructure on our nation's battlefields, which he said were $229 million behind in deferred maintenance. However, under the White House budget proposal, a wish list from the executive branch to Congress for the 2018 spending, Zinke's department would receive a 12% cut or about $1.6 billion. It would take 20,426 donations of $78,333 in order to make up for the money that they're going to lose that Trump is stealing from them. It means absolutely nothing. Yeah, he's giving up his salary, fine, but he is finding other ways to make money.
Today, the Associated Press and Washington Post report that the new president had two disastrous phone calls with the leaders of two of our closest allies on Earth. AP reports tonight that the new president threatened to send U.S. troops over the border. Literally, the AP has reported that President Trump threatened to invade Mexico in a conversation with the Mexican president. Okay. Simultaneously, the Washington Post is reporting that the president hung up on the prime minister of Australia after getting into a disagreement with him about refugee policy and spending some time bragging about the size of his election victory. President Trump then reportedly hung up.
Couple things to understand about Syria. Syria is a country that has been at war effectively for thousands of years. And that's just the way it's been. a ton of bad blood in that nation. But of course, it's not everybody. You can't just say that this race or this religion or they're all bad. But that's not what it is. But the war, the bad blood, it runs very deep in that country. And Syria has a very complicated history. The guy that is in power now, Assad, he's been in power since about 99 or 2000. And he got into power after his dad died. So, and his dad ran Syria for a couple of decades. And so that's who they have in power right now. But Assad is a terrible, terrible leader. Of course, he's not democratically elected. He's certainly not democratically accountable. And being wealthy and privileged and believing that he's blessed and all the rest, he has no responsibility to the people of Syria. And if the people of Syria don't like it, and Syria has been dealing with any number of issues as of late, they've been horribly affected by climate change, which has made food very scarce. It's caused a lot of farmers to lose their farms. And then, of course, they're dealing with ISIS. Prime picking for ISIS to go in there and just take the country over, especially when Assad doesn't particularly care about his own people to begin with. So their word came out that Assad was gassing his own people. Oh my God, that sounds... It is. It's terrible. Right? But it's the kind of thing that Assad does. And Assad does a lot. And it might have just been testing the new president. Here's the other thing you need to know about Assad. He's being propped up by Putin right now. Putin likes Assad very much. Putin's idea of the entire world would be for every country to be run by a wealthy dictator and to not be accountable to any of the people. That's the way he's conducted himself in Russia. And that's the now that he's tried to involve himself in the German elections and the French elections. And he wants to see those countries also, Germany, wow, again, run by dictators, by horrible, horrible dictators that are unaccountable to the people. That's the world that Putin wants. And so he's helping prop up Assad. And so we had this missile attack, and our Secretary of State recently went to Russia. And in Russia, Putin says, I don't understand the point of what your missile attack was. Now, he launched 59 Tomahawk missiles at an airbase. And by the way, didn't even shut down the airbase. Really didn't do a lot of damage. Just spent a whole bunch of freaking money was what he did. So, this from Raw Story, as noted by the Palmer Report, Trump owns stock in Raytheon. You've probably never heard of them, Raytheon, R-A-Y-T-H-E-O-N, which was reported by Business Insider in 2015. So Trump owns stock in Raytheon. And here's why that's interesting. According to Trump's financial disclosure reports filed with the FEC in 2015, his stock portfolio includes investments in technology firms, financial institutions, and defense firms, including Raytheon. Financial institutions. Perhaps this is why he's hired so many people from Goldman Sachs to work for his administration. And yeah, he owns stock in Raytheon. So when he launched the attack on the Al-Shirat military field, used by both Syrian and Russian military forces, hitting it with 59 Tomahawk missiles that were manufactured by Raytheon, he himself made a ton of money. And here's the other thing it did. Raytheon's stock went up. Of course it did. He did it to make himself money. He did it to show everybody that he's a big boy. He's got his big boy pants on. Look what I can do. And today, as I record on this microphone right here, he just dropped a MOAB on what he believes to be an underground bunker for ISIS. Remember, he said he'd defeat ISIS in 30 days. That hasn't been done yet. So now he's dropped a MOAB, which is the mother of all bombs, M-O-A-B. We've never dropped a MOAB before in this country. They were manufactured in 2003 because we were going to use them in Iraq, but then it never came up. But then he decided to use one today. Probably another one of his, look at me, I'm a big boy things. And so it appears this is something that he did to just flex his muscle. And the official newspaper in China, which, by the way, is a state-run paper, that's exactly what they said. Is they said, he's just flexing his muscle. He's trying to show everybody how big he is. because he's not really that big. He recently sat down, Trump did, with the president of China, Xi Jinping, and said, hey, you guys could probably help us do something about North Korea, right? You guys have probably got a lot of power over North Korea, don't you? And then when he was explained by the Chinese president about how complicated that particular issue is, he said the same damn thing he said about healthcare. Wow, I didn't know it was that complicated. Who knew it could be that complicated? I remember when Obama was running against Hillary Clinton in 2008. One of the major complaints from Hillary Clinton supporters was that we don't need somebody learning on the job. When that call comes in at 3 a.m., and that became a very famous line, and we did great with Obama because we had somebody that was thinking about things. Yeah, he wasn't perfect at everything, and you know, nobody's a purist, and no one's going to be perfect at everything. But when it came to these very serious issues, he thought about it. And if he was ignorant on something, he didn't let it show. He listened, he responded, so on and so forth. But Trump lifts it right up. Wow, I had no idea things are the best. Who knew? Who knew that healthcare could be so complicated? He doesn't want to be president. He did it before. He doesn't now. And he's just trying to make as much money as he can. When he was running for president, and actually even before he was running for president, he complained so much, President Obama, so much on the golf course all the time. My God, is that all he does is play golf? By the way, at this point in his presidency, at this point, you know, I think we're in the 3-month mark, Obama hadn't played any golf yet. I mean, he eventually did, you know, and it got to be a fair amount. But what this president's doing is absolutely dwarfing it. So this from themike.com, quoting here, every 2.8 days, Trump visits a Trump-owned property, which means that money goes to the Trump property, which then goes into his pocket. Every 5.6 days, he plays golf at his own resort. More money for Trump. Quoting here, according to a new analysis in the Washington Post, President Donald Trump has spent 28 days at a Trump-owned property, whether it be his hotel, at the Winter White House, Mar-a-Lago Resort, since taking office on January 20th. Given that his presidency started less than 3 months ago, that averages out to Trump visiting one of his properties every 2.8 days. Percentage-wise, Trump has visited a property that generates him money 35.9% of the days that he's been president. So here's the other thing. The Secret Service, which doesn't just protect the president, they also deal with cybersecurity, check fraud, things of that nature. They recently went to him, to the president, because it costs so much money to protect him. They got to protect Melania in New York at Trump Tower. They got to protect all of his kids. And they said, hey, boy, it's a lot of money protecting you, a lot of money protecting you people, especially with how much he's on vacation. So it costs a lot of money to protect you folks. Could the Secret Service get another $24, $25 million in our budget, please, so that we can continue to protect the president? And he said no. What Trump believes, what most conservatives believe, is whatever they hear on conservative talk radio and reading conservative articles, you know, on conservative television. And what they're being told is that the government has enough money. What they need to do is they just need to spend the money better that they have. So I guess that's his idea with his budget. Slash all the programs that help people and give billions more dollars to the program that kills people. So he told the Secret Service, no, you can't have that extra money. Yeah, I know how expensive it is to watch over me and my kids and all the rest and all these vacations I go on, but you can't have that money. So the Secret Service doesn't just get to print money and they don't get to just keep perpetually asking. They have to figure out in real world time what they're going to do. So they're going to quit focusing on a lot of those other things that they do. Those other things that, by the way, when they're investigating all these frauds, cyber fraud and all the rest, those things help us out, you and I as regular people. But Trump is saying, F it. Who cares about you folks? I need to make more money. I need to spend as much time as I can at my resorts and spend money on my crap so that I can make more money. And has told the Secret Service, absolutely not. Quoting here, Trump doesn't play as much golf as he just visits his own properties, but he does play more than former President Barack Obama. According to the Post analysis, Trump hits the links every 5.6 days, meaning that he's golfed 17.9% of the days he's been president. Comparatively, Obama golfed every 8.8 days. Among the many things Trump has rambled on about on Twitter over the years, he often criticized the former president, saying that he golfed so much. Quoting here, can you believe that with all the problems and difficulties facing the U.S., President Obama spent the day playing golf? Worse than Carter. You know how his tweets are. Trump's numerous trips to Mar-a-Lago are no small expense to American taxpayers. Each trip costs upwards of $3 million, more money in his pocket. According to the Post analysis, if Trump continues at this rate, he will have spent 524 days visiting properties he owns by the time January 20th, 2021 comes around. 524 days visiting his own properties. We don't have much of a manufacturing base in the United States anymore. We just don't. We've given it all to slave countries. Some of it has gone to automation, things of that nature. But one of the things that we do continue to manufacture is arms, is weapons, bombs, missiles, tanks, planes, aircraft carriers. We still manufacture those things here in America. So when money is spent on those things, you could argue that it creates jobs, sure, because those things are made here in America. But when you make things that only make war, are you really making anything? And if Trump decides that with his historically low poll numbers, that he needs to find a way to get those poll numbers up, how much more do we get to look forward to him just lobbing tons and tons of bombs at countries not to make war? And by the way, he's been asked by the U.S. press. He's been asked by the foreign press. He's been asked by Syria. He's been asked by Russia. What was the point of all those bombs? What were you really trying to do? And his Secretary of State has no answer. The White House has no official answer. Hey, you just kept doing bad stuff to your people. Yeah, but you can. And now he's looking for enemies. He's trying to start a war. But maybe it's not a full-fledged war. Maybe it's just enough of a war. Like the Falklands, you know? Just a little war. You know, like Beirut. Just a little war. You know, like the Gulf War for George H.W. Bush. You know, just a little war. You know, just a little war. But this president, unlike previous presidents, needs just a little war so that he can make himself just a little money.
Founding fathers, as George quoted Adams as saying, did not believe in going abroad to find demons to slay. So there is this tradition in America that the United States should defend only its own vital interests, and it was not put on earth to defend all the imagined interests of countries abroad, unless they directly related to those of the United States. That tradition was alive in America until, I think, maybe roughly the Clinton administration, when the so-called neocon liberal interventionist orthodoxy came to dominate our media and our policy making, and we've embarked on all these wars. So, for example, everybody knows this, we demonized Saddam, we went to war, we got what we wanted, what we got. We demonized Gaddafi, we went to war in Libya, and now it's going to be the second capital of the Islamic State. And Senator Sanders took up the domestic tradition that you referred to, but nobody has come forward in the last 25 years, since the end of the Soviet Union, to take up the other tradition of restrained use of American power abroad. And instead, that tradition has been called isolationist. It's not isolationist. It's thoughtful, rational, and selective. And we've lost that.
That's Professor Stephen Cohen, who teaches Russian studies and who also writes for The Nation magazine. Whenever it comes to intervention, certainly whenever it comes to the Russia issue, there is nobody that I refer to more or read more articles from with respect to that issue than Professor Stephen Cohen. He's got a very sober and thoughtful look at this particular issue. I would recommend reading any of his articles, which are generally publicly available to anybody within this audience. There's another thing I want to get into for this particular segment, We are in the middle of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And this is not a time to celebrate sexual assault. It is a time to recognize that it's still very much a problem, that it's happening to the people that we know, that we love, the people that are in our lives. And Bill O'Reilly, who I am no fan of, is off of Fox News at this particular moment. They said that he is going to be off the air for a little while. His last show was on April 11th, 2017. And they said he's going to be off the air for about 2 weeks. We'll see how that shakes out. But I think that there's a good possibility that he might not be back, because he's costing Fox a lot of money. Bill has been accused by another half dozen women, and I say another because this isn't the first time, another half dozen women of sexually assaulting them. And it looks like that he, his lawyers, Fox, they're going to have to pay out a good amount of money, because this keeps happening, because he keeps doing this kind of stuff. And it took Trump no time at all to come out and defend Bill O'Reilly. He wasn't asked about Bill O'Reilly. He took it upon himself to just come out and say, Bill O'Reilly is innocent. He has done absolutely nothing wrong. And this is how dismissive that we have become when it comes to sexual assault. Trump himself has admitted on tape, he didn't know he's being recorded, but has admitted on tape that he sexually assaults women. He said he grabs their genitals without even seeking their permission. I'm born in Montana, raised largely in Southern California, but I've lived in half a dozen states at least. Actually, probably a dozen states. But I lived in Spokane for a long time. That's where I met my beautiful bride. That's where all my kids were born. And there's an article in the Inlander that caught my eye, because it's like a story from back home. And the headline is, Spokane judge cites Trump's pussy grabbing in a decision on the sexual assault of a young woman. So here's the way it goes. Quoting here from the article, the 17-year-old boy was sentenced to 6 months of community custody and 25 hours of community service. Had the judge found evidence of sexual motivation, the boy would not have been required as a sex offender, and his sentence length would not have increased, the defense attorney said. The entire incident was caught on a security camera. Last June at North Central High School, here's what happened according to the judge's retelling in open court. The teenage boy and the victim, who were 16 and 15 years old respectively at the time, were hanging out in a hallway after school on a Friday. According to their testimony, the boy and the victim were not dating, though they knew each other. Initially, the boy was dancing in front of the girl while they both waited for rides. Later, he playfully tapped the side of her head, and the girl did the same. Then he poked her stomach and hips and grabbed her crotch and butt several times. The girl gives no reaction, the judge summarized. She's talking to him, and he's rolling his hands around, and they're doing a dance-type move. The following Monday, the school's dean of students, Mary Gustafson, confronted the victim, who she described as shy, standoffish, and embarrassed. The victim acknowledged that she was laughing and joking with the boy, but she felt violated when he touched her. The victim said that while she never said it was offensive until Ms. Gustafson talked to her, she still felt violated because the touching was unwanted. And she didn't want to tell anybody because she didn't know what to say. So when he grabbed her crotch and her buttocks, I know I'm using medical terms here, she did not know how to respond. And the judge says, well, she goes back to joking with him and she doesn't seem to lash out. She doesn't seem to freak out on him. So that probably wasn't sexual assault. So the question in this particular case is grabbing a girl's genitals inherently a sexually motivated act? That was the question facing Judge James Triplett last month in deciding the seriousness of an assault on a 15-year-old girl. In unraveling this question, Triplett invoked President Donald Trump's boasting about grabbing a woman's genitals. Quote, our president openly brags that he can grab women by the pussy. His words. Whenever he wants to, because that's what powerful, rich people get to do, Triplett said. But citing a lack of evidence, as well as other pop culture references such as hip-hop artists grabbing their crotches during a Saturday Night Live performance and Justin Timberlake exposing Janet Jackson's boob during the Super Bowl halftime, Triplett absolved the teenage boy of any sexual motivation attached to the crime. Quote, "The bottom line here is that so many things in our society and culture have done to cross the line regarding appropriate behavior." Triplett said, "Yet in our society that allows risque and sexually explicit behavior to be modeled to our children who are developing physically, emotionally, and with respect to their maturity, they often watch these public figures to determine what's hip, what's okay, or what's acceptable." Okay, Judge Triplett, get ready to get dressed down by Melvin. So I am a performer. I have been performing for more than 20 years, generally as the lead vocalist. I'm a DJ now, which means my crotch-grabbing days are largely over. But back in the day, whenever I was doing punk or hip-hop, I couldn't even help it. And yeah, I watched it on television. Okay, yeah, pop culture figures. Rappers grab their wangs all the time. It just happens. I don't know where it came from. And then when I became a performer, it didn't take me long to start grabbing my own crotch. But mind the words there. My own crotch. Never thought I'd have to say that on this microphone. It's true. Rappers are grabbing their own crotch. I was on stage grabbing my own crotch, right? Whatever he saw said, they're grabbing their own crotch to walk up to another person, knowing it's not okay, knowing that you do not have their consent, grabbing them by the crotch. And there was an outbreak of this after Trump got elected to be president. It happened at elementary schools. It happened at middle schools. They go, hey, if the president can do it, then clearly it's okay, right? The president does it, then it is not illegal. That whole thing. It's sexual assault, any way you look at it. But the judge goes, yo, president's getting away with this? Then guess what, 17-year-old boy? You too are going to get away with this. And what it also does is it makes it very unlikely that another woman is going to come forward when she feels sexually assaulted. Now, this particular girl was not going to come forward. She was shy and standoffish, and she's, no. And then she did come forward. And the judge goes, nah, the president does it, and people still made him president, then clearly it's okay. And that's what he decided during Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Back over to Fox News. The CEO of Fox News recently had to step down, Roger Ailes, because of him also being accused of sexual assault. A few of the women that work at Fox came out and said, yeah, he would ask for sexual favors in order to give us promotions. Like, that's just the way things were. And you may have heard about, at Fox News, the leg cam. This is where on either side of the table, right, you sit on the outside, okay, and they've got a lower angle so they can see your legs and your short skirt and all the rest. And I was listening to Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Faith Staley, who's a humorist and author, who's regularly on that show, the subject of Fox News came up. And she goes, you know what? I've got a little story about Fox News.
I can also tell you that, if this is just a broad sort of conservatives are better looking, I can tell you that when I have appeared on Fox News, and I have, mm-hmm. when you go into hair and makeup, I mean, they tell you you're going to be sitting in the legs chair.
Wow.
And strongly suggest that you wear a short dress.
Get out.
And then they made me quite look like a blow-up doll.
Uh-huh.
Like, the hair goes out, the lips go super, super big and glossy.
So it's not necessarily a surprise that this thing happens over there at Fox News. What is surprising, of course, is that a lot of folks are tending to find out about it now. So we have the president defending somebody who accused of sexual assault. He doesn't know the whole story, but he knows this. He knows that he likes Bill O'Reilly. So Bill O'Reilly must be innocent. And he knows that he himself has been sued by women, accused himself of sexual assault. And so those women must be lying. And when we have this attitude that when women speak out about this particular issue, that they're going to be accused of lying, that they're going to be accused of just trying to get money out of somebody rich, right? When a Spokane judge says, you know what, if the president can do it, then it's okay. It makes it unlikely that women are going to speak up. It makes sexual assault the new normal. And here's the thing that we need to recognize with, and I know it's hard with the way the news is sort of cascading down right now. We need to recognize that this is not okay. And this is not the new normal. And this cannot become the new normal. And we need to listen to these ladies when they speak. And the judge in Spokane, I would like to tell you that you're flat wrong. And anybody that thinks that that's a good idea to grab another person by that very, in that very private area, and to do it unprompted, to do it in public, and then to try to shame them when they say something about it, just flat wrong. So during the campaign, Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, said on any number of occasions, we're not paying for your wall. We're not paying for the wall. We're not paying for... And then he said, and one, we're not paying for that effing wall. And oh my God, Trump clutched his pearls and he was just, what did he say?
Have you heard anything from former Mexican President Vicente Fox?
Well, I think he should apologize for his foul mouth. I think it's a disgusting thing that he said. And I could tell you, I would not use that word. But if I did use that word, I probably wouldn't have even been allowed on the stage tonight.
You do understand there's a touch of irony in that, though, that you're saying to someone for using foul language.
I mean, I don't know what the problem is, but I think he should apologize to a lot of people that heard that word. That was a very... I heard it this afternoon. I couldn't believe it.
Trump would regularly use that word from the stage. No problem. He would use it all the time. And there's tape that exists, so y'all don't get to fight with me on this. So Trump is accused of sexual assault, and then he admits to sexual assault. And all of this becomes okay. It becomes okay with a lot of the American people. It becomes definitely okay with conservatives. And then Bill O'Reilly does and is accused of the same thing. And I'm pretty certain that you have to remember Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton... Right, sort of a lackluster president, fine. But Bill Clinton is remembered for one thing and one thing only, right? I mean, he had the welfare to work program. He himself had a little war. You know, he had the crime bill and all these. But he's remembered for one thing and one thing only, the Lewinsky scandal. And the reason he's remembered for the Lewinsky scandal is because the Republicans made it a thing. And they made it a huge thing. Right, there was the Star Report with Kenneth. They made it this massive thing. Right? They made it sound like they really gave an S about women. So it should be surprising, or not surprising, I suppose, depending on how cynical you are, and I am trying not to be so cynical, that they all of a sudden don't care when the Commander-in-Chief does it, and that they don't care that Bill O'Reilly does it, and that the women, by the way, the women... And Trump said he was going to sue the women that were accusing him of sexual assault. The women will be bullied by conservatives. Because this is another one of those things where it's okay if their guy does it, but it's not okay if the other guy does it. I want to point out one more thing, and then I want to get into change, and then I want to send you on about your day. So the question was posed by in a Washington Post ABC poll in 2013. Would you support President Obama striking a military base in Syria? That was the question. 38% of Democrats said, 38% of Democrats said that they would support that, right? Fast forward to right now, okay? So 2017, that same poll was asked again, Democrats and Republicans. We're going to do the Democrats first. This is fun. 37% 4 years ago when the president was Obama, 37% of Democrats said they would support it. 38% of Democrats said that they would support it today. New president, and the situation has escalated a little bit. But there's a 1% difference. There's not a lot of evolution there. 1% difference. Quite honestly, that could be nothing more than a margin of error. So let's talk about the Republicans. They were asked the same question back in 2013. Would you support President Obama striking a military base in Syria? Remember, Syria is gassing their own people. Back then, Republicans said overwhelmingly, okay, 22% supported it. 22%, which means that the other 78% said, no, absolutely not. Fast forward to right now. And we're effectively dealing with the same situation. It's escalated a little bit, but I think that they're just trying to test the new president. Fast forward to right now. Ask Republicans that same question. Now, remember, the Democrats went from 37% to 38%, probably margin of error. The Republicans went from 22% to 86% support. And what's the difference? The difference is that Donald Trump is now the president. The parties get accused, especially by folks who don't belong to either party, they get accused of being mirror images of each other. They both do the same thing. It happens on both sides. They both do it. And it's absolutely not true. My positions now for this president are the same as they were for the last president. My standards now for the Democratic Party, as lackluster as they are exactly the same standards that I have always had for them. My standards for the Republicans, exactly the same. I don't change depending on who's in charge. I don't change with the wind. But Republicans, they do. So striking Syria was not okay because Obama was in charge. But it is okay now that Trump is in charge. It was not okay that Bill Clinton carried on an illicit sexual relationship with that woman, right? Which was consensual, by the way. But it is okay that Bill O'Reilly sexually assaults dozens of women. That Trump sexually assaults dozens of women. And that they, well, Trump at least, admits to it. It's okay because that's their guy. There is no base there. There's no bottom to that barrel. There is no floor in that house. There is no convictions among those people. They merely do what they are told.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
I live in the Portland, Vancouver area. And in my area, there's absolutely no shortage of people willing to get in front of a crowd, willing to get on a microphone, willing to tell people what they think about the issues of the day. There's no shortage of people willing to go join their local Democratic and Republican party to show up to town. It is very politically motivated around here. But that, as large as it is, and it covers a very wide swath of Southwest Washington and Northwest Oregon, that is still my bubble. So it appears to me that there's a Democratic Party, or hell, when I lived in Spokane, I decided to Google Spokane Democrats. I found out that there's a Spokane Democratic Party. Remember, Spokane is right north next to the panhandle for Idaho. And in Idaho, that's where a lot of the KKK resides. They lost their bunker a few years ago, but they're still very much there. But here's the thing that you might not know. And for those of you outside of the country, this will be somewhat interesting. For those of you in the country, especially if you're in the Midwest or you're in the Deep South or you're in Wyoming, South Dakota, Idaho, Utah, Oklahoma, North Dakota, Arkansas, Tennessee, Indiana, or Missouri, according to the Washington Post, these 10 states have at least 70% Republicans in both the House and Senate, at least 75% Republicans in statewide offices, governor, state, Senate, attorney general, etc., pardon me, at least 75% have Republicans in their delegations in the House of Representatives. In these 10 states, the Democratic Party is on life support. And in a lot of a lot of areas, in these states in particular, and in some other states, there is no institutional Democratic Party. It's not just that there isn't a leader for their local Democratic Party. There is no local Democratic Party. See, the Republicans are more excited about their conquest of destroying the country than the Democrats are their mission of trying to help put the country together, help make the country more inclusive. We've got tons and tons of media owned only by conservatives. If right, you can go to any city in this country and have no problem finding right-wing talk, but you will struggle to find left-wing talk. You'll find the Koch brothers dumping money into dozens and dozens of states to make sure that they get the people that they want in office and to make sure that they get the legislation and only the legislation that they want. So here's what I'm saying. If you live in the United States, you're within the sound of my voice, you're a listener to this show, there's a pretty solid chance, unless you live in one of the hugely populated areas, San Francisco, Seattle, sorry, those places are full of liberals, there's a very good chance that you don't have a local Democratic Party, any local Democratic representatives. You yourself, and it sounds like a heavy lift, but you yourself could start that party. You yourself could be the progressive voice. You're not the only progressive in Oklahoma. You're not the only progressive in Tennessee. You're damn sure not the only progressive in the state of Texas. They're everywhere. But sometimes it takes an institution for everyone to join, right? A group for everyone to join. And you could start by, you know, maybe starting a drinking liberally group where you guys get together at a bar and you have some pints and you talk about it. And then maybe you get together and you have some fundraisers and then you start a Democratic Party. You print up some t-shirts and hats and it just kind of goes from there. But we need, and then you, yes, you, as either the leader or somebody who's strongly involved with your local Democratic Party, you could pick who runs in the local races. In a lot of red states especially, there is no opposition. A lot of Republicans run completely unopposed in these races. And then they get to Washington, D.C., and they do what... They don't care what you want. They get to Washington, D.C., and they do whatever the hell they want, and you be damned. And it's not as though the Democratic Party is perfect. The Democratic Party could be perfect if the Democratic Party had you involved. Now, perhaps you live in some other places like, say, San Diego. San Diego's a heavily populated area, but San Diego is also very conservative. So in a place like that, you could join your local Democratic Party because it's probably very small. I don't know. I didn't look into San Diego before I got on the mic. I just said it because I used to live in San Diego. But here's the thing. And this is sort of an untapped thing in a lot of places in America. In all 50 states, in all the thousands of counties in the United States, there's tons of Republican representation. And that's not because Republicans are so great or they're so popular. It's just because they're so effing determined to destroy everything, right? And they've got endless amounts of money because of these billionaires. Come back around to the billionaires, these billionaires that will spend endless amounts of money to make sure that they get exactly what they want. And make sure that you, as a regular working person, you do not get what you want. So what can you do? Get in touch with your local Democratic Party. See if they need more people. See if your local Democratic Party even exists. And if it doesn't exist, make it freaking exist because you can do that kind of thing. You know, get involved and then start sending good people to D.C. And yeah, the Democratic Party's not perfect. Who cares? Become a Democratic Socialist. Become an outright socialist. Who cares? Just become something more progressive than what we're dealing with right now. I can say with absolute certainty that what's happening in D.C., what's happening in a lot of state houses, what's happening in a lot of governor's mansions is not reflective of what we, the people, want. And if you want to get involved, it starts locally. I do a national show. I talk a lot of national issues, but all politics are local. Start local. Start in your state. And by the way, you can also just start calling your representative, your two senators, your House member, call them and telling them exactly what you think of them, exactly what you think of their votes. Be polite, but be firm. And let them know that you're out there watching. And then get involved with your local party. There's never been a more prime time for democracy. And even if your area doesn't have a Democratic representative, I can almost certainly guarantee you they do have an indivisible group. Punch in your city's name and the word indivisible, and I bet you it's going to take you on a fantastic journey. I wasn't sure how else to say that. So, hey, it is what it is. Democratic Party, get out there. Go, join, get. You in the red states. Yeah, you're not the only liberal. Get, come on. Get. All right, I'm going to let you get back to your day. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you could also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work part to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So for you to reach out to us, and as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.